Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 4th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, I had the little ones over this week, babysitting a little bit. And
I'm not allowed to call it that. My wife gets upset.
Well, I was watching
the grandkids.
Oh. Yeah, the grandkids. I was watching the grandkids. And
you called them the little ones. That's
you know, I like to play as much as I can with them and, you know, physical activity, take them outside, that kind of thing. But they pretty much kicked my butt. So I'm like the typical babysitter.
Hey, seven again, eh?
No, a little too young for that right now. Soon, though. Soon. Likes to play with the poker chips and that kind of stuff. And so I'm working my way up. But right now, I just sit them in front of the TV. And
kind of a grandparent.
You know, we watch TV together, and, you know, I noticed something really peculiar, and it's funny you brought up Deuce of Seven in poker, because, you know, I'm like, they're like, well, I want to watch this, I want to watch that, and when you run out of the on-demand stuff that's there for the kids, it's like, okay, now you got to pick something off the live menu, and you would be amazed how many titles, in just this 48-hour span of me searching the television, have poker titles. Or poker terms, and yet, of course, have nothing to do with poker. So, it's funny, you know, what I want to do is I want to run a series of multiple choices across you and see if you can figure out which one is not the legitimate television or movie.
Listen, no, I'll pause right here. I scored only a 300 on my SAT, so don't expect much out of
me. Now, remember, if you don't know the answer, skip it. Because if you put in an answer and it's wrong, it counts more against you.
No. You put all C's all the way down.
Oh, yeah, just C.
Yeah.
Now, it's funny. When I was trying to come up with the fake title, I would double-check on IMDb to see if it's not really the name of a movie or a show. And you would not believe.
No one watches more TV than I do, so I'll probably know it.
You would not believe. Almost, really, I want everyone in the Ante Up Nation to literally go on IMDb and type in any poker term you want. 9 times out of 10, it will be a movie or a show. I mean, the stuff that I typed in, I was like, there's no way there's something called The Rake. And there was! There was a show or a movie called The Rake! I'm like, oh my god! So, I mean, literally, almost anything you can come up with. So, anyway, none of these shows are about poker, basically, or movies. So
Basically,
I mean, well, like, you know, there might be one that might have something to do with, like, the premise of the movie or something, but really, for the most part, none of it was about poker. And these were all titles in the menu in a 48-hour period. I'm not making these up. Like, I didn't just go through IMDb and pick some funny. No, these were all legitimate television shows or movies that were going to be on Fios Verizon over that 2-day period. So, all right, here goes. All right, this is the one that it's hilarious that it's the biggest offender, and you won't believe it, but these are all kids shows. This first category. Which one's the fake one? Okay.
Right.
Pair of kings, two queens, fish hooks, full house.
Which one is the fake one?
Which one's the fake title?
So three of them are real.
Three of those are actual shows for children. Two on Disney, one at Nickelodeon. So pair of kings, two queens, fish hooks, full house.
Let's see. I'm assuming full house is the John Stamos, Bob Saget before he turned dirty show.
Very good.
Fish hook sounds like it could be a cuddly little fish that's you know hangs out with SpongeBob, so I'm going to eliminate that. Let's see. Two queens and pair of kings. Pair of kings sounds too hard to come up with. So I'm going to go with two queens.
Ding, 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 ding. You got the first one right, dude. That is awesome.
That process elimination.
Process
right?
of elimination. You are one for one, my friend. Yeah. But, I mean, those are all Disney shows. And they're all like kind of like right in a row. Two of them are Disney. Pair of Kings and Fish Hooks on Disney. I'm like, really?
Star King Friday?
No. Actually, it's like these two kids who somehow become kings of like this exotic island or and I don't know. So it's really weird. But like, sure enough, I'm flicking through the channels and the little guy's like, yeah, yeah, Pair of Kings. I'm like, what? No, that's poker. He's like, no, 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 Pair of Kings on Disney. It's these two boys. And I'm like, what? And then like, oh, yeah, that's Fish Hooks. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So Disney, you know, subconsciously trying to tell kids to gamble, yet we can't have poker in Orlando. Interesting. Okay, the next one. K9, The Rock, Totally Busted, Smooth Call.
All right. K9, I think, is probably some kind of lame remake of the movie that was awesome.
Now, don't forget, these can be movies, too. These are just things on the menu, so it could be the movie.
On the menu. Okay. And, all right, so one was what? Smooth Call was one?
One was Smooth Call. One was Totally Busted.
Totally Busted.
One was The Rock, and one was K9.
Wow. This is terrible. So this is just kids show. This isn't the...
No. The first...
Totally Busted is not what I'm thinking then.
No. Wait. The first category was kid stuff. But while
okay. So
the rest...
Stuff
yeah, the rest of this stuff is all legitimate just shows and stuff. Nothing to do with kids, but I just, the first category.
Okay, because Totally Busted. That's a good flick.
Well, here's the thing, is that the fact that I saw these when I was looking for the kids to watch something, that's what started this. So now I just went into the rest of the menu and couldn't believe how many shows. So only that first one was kids. Now the rest of them are just movies or shows that are on TV.
I'm going to eliminate Totally Busted. So Smooth Calling, what's the other one?
The Rock.
Our Rock is Sean Connery. I'm going to go with Smooth Call.
Ding, 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 ding. Two for two. Totally Busted is actually something on the Playboy Channel.
Yeah, see, that's what I told you. It had to be TMZ or Showtime late at night. No, not that I've ever seen that, but I don't even get those channels that the wife knows.
Okay, you're two for two. Next one. These were Showtime movies. Okay, this category. Now, not all categories, but this time it was one. So
I'll go ahead and eliminate Armageddon, Black Hawk Down, and Independence Day.
Yeah.
Whatever the fourth one is, that's it.
Okay, ready? The River Rat.
All right.
Bubbled. Chop Shop. The Poker House.
Ooh.
Now, the Poker House, Chop Shop, Bubbled, The River Rat. They're all – one of them wasn't on Showtime. And isn't a legitimate movie.
River Rat.
Or a show, whatever.
Chop Shop. And what was the last one?
The Poker House.
Poker House. I'm going to go... Chop Shop sounds like an easy one of those Fast and Furious 7 movies.
Yeah.
Poker House is probably pretty legitimate. River Rat, I think I remember. I'm going to go with Bubbled.
Ding, 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 three for three,
oh,
dude.
Gosh. I'm running the table.
I should have made this harder, man. I can't believe you're getting them this easily.
Seriously, I'm surprised.
Really good so far. All right, so you're three for three.
I couldn't even prep for it.
I know you had no idea I was launching this on you. So, all right, the next one. It's Your Call, First Hand, The Drop, Napkins.
Oh, man. I'm never going to think about this one. I'm living large right now. I'm going to go with Napkins.
Yeah, it's Napkins.
Yeah, that one's pretty lame.
Yeah, but you never know. It could be so ridiculous that you might not. All right. The next one. Grind, extract, rags, big stack.
Big stack. All right. Extract is an absolutely terrible movie. Wonderful cast. I have no idea how that happened. Rags and big stack.
And grind.
Grind. All right. Grind, I'm going to eliminate. Ooh, can it be napkins and then rags? I think you're smarter than that. Rags. Big stack seems like it could be. Oh, hey, I'm playing with the house's money here. I'm going with rags.
No, yes, I finally win. I am not smarter than that. No, I am smarter than that. Rags is actually was a movie on like local college station, like WSF or something. Big stack was the fake one. Big stack was the fake one.
Looks like YouTube.
All right, so you're one for you're 3 for 4. You got one wrong.
All right,
here we go.
Yeah, like 50 of these. I'm just letting the listening audience know whether they should.
No, you're. I'm sorry. You're 4 for 5. You're 4 for 5. There's 3 more. 3 more. All right.
3 more. Wow.
I know. This is all I say. This is all in one day. So, here we go. The Turn. Let's Make a Deal. Monster Fish. Sweat Equity.
Sweat Equity. That's terrible. All right, let's make a deal. Come on, I hope that's what I think it is. Sweat Equity. That sucks. What's the first one again?
The Turn.
The Turn.
And then
right.
The other one was Monster Fish.
Nicole Kidman, Naomi Watts thriller. And what was the one? I'm sorry, I was...
Monster Fish.
Monster Fish. See, if it's Monster Fish versus Great Gatorade or something, it would be a sci-fi movie. But just Monster Fish, I don't know. I'm going to say Sweat Equity.
Nope.
Oh!
That's a real movie or whatever, real show. The Turn.
The Turn, really?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, only 2 more. Half and Half. Raise. King of Queens, The Unit, which I dubbed Scott's Tournament Strategy.
That's good. I like that. All right. Well, The Unit stars the president from 24. So that's out. King of Queens stars is another one of those fat guy shows where they have a hot wife.
I always say that, too, when people bring up one of those shows. I'm like, why is it that every fat guy gets a hot wife?
There's nothing about that whatsoever. I'm a fat guy.
They don't have fat women with... You know, hot guys. Not that I would know what a hot guy was, but...
all right, so what are the first two again?
Okay, let's see. Half and Half.
Okay, Half and Half.
Raise.
And Raise. I don't think you're going to make up Half and Half. I'm going to go with Raise.
It is Raise. Yay, ding, ding, ding. All right, final one. Online Crush. Card Sharks. Blindside.
Yeah.
A Good Fold.
Good Fold. All right. Blindside was Sandra Bullock getting cheated on. Card Sharks is one of the most awesome game shows ever invented.
I threw it in there for your amusement.
Online Crush could be a Roco. A rom-con. Depends on who you listen to. So what's the last one again?
A Good Fold.
You can tell my handwriting is terrible. I write it down. I can't even read it right.
Well, I'm glad you're taking it that seriously. You're writing it down.
I'm going to go with Good Fold on this one.
You are right. Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
6 out of 8, buddy.
Not bad.
Pretty good. Imagine, though? I mean, really, that's over like a 24-hour period. All of those were, and I'm serious, if you go on IMDb and type in any poker term you want, you're going to find probably a movie that is, or show, or short film that is named that. There were times where I'm like, oh, this is a good one. I write it into IMDb, and there it is. And I'm like, damn. So all the ones that's why some of them were kind of easy, because it was hard to come up with one that wasn't really a movie. Or a TV show.
Oh,
well, good job, buddy. I'm shocked. I didn't think you'd get that many right. Not because... You know, it was easy or hard. I just thought, you know, some of them, I can't imagine a TV show called Fish Hooks, or First Hand. I don't know. It was pretty rags.
Yeah, you underestimate my recall ability when it comes to sitting in front of the tube munching on chips.
Well, speaking of TV shows, High Stakes Poker debuted this week.
Yeah, see, you probably would have been better trying to ask me which of these shows is not a poker show. I watch more crap than I do poker on TV.
Oh, man. Well, a couple of things came out of this show that I wanted to talk about. Obviously, it's the first one with Norm Macdonald, and, I really don't know, and I know you don't watch this stuff anymore, so I just don't understand how anyone, like, within the business, the company who's actually making this, Poker Productions or whatever,
right,
can actually watch and listen to this show with just one host making jokes and observations and not think that it's really odd. And, yeah. And it's funny because he obviously is a poker player but knows that he's not even remotely close to the caliber of these people. Like you and I, when we talk about stuff, we know we're not remotely close to the half the people who are even listening to the show. So, there is that, genuineness. So when he does make, jokes or whatever, it's like, hello, people. This is why sitcoms use live audiences when they tape their shows or laugh tracks, to tell them when to laugh. I'm sitting there and I'm like, did he just make a joke, Gene? And she's like, I don't, it's so hard. It's so hard to listen and watch, and without having a real expert and someone else to bounce it off of, it's just really, really awkward. You need that feedback, that reassurance that someone else is laughing at this, so it's okay to laugh, or I don't know. It's just really quiet.
Yeah,
quiet
some people
awkward.
Would probably say we're probably a better show if it was just one or the other of us, because we laugh at everything.
That's
none
not
of
true.
It's funny.
That's not true. No, but really.
You're laughing already.
But really.
No, I thought about this, I didn't really watch the show much at all ever, even back when AJ and Gabe were doing it. But but I certainly thought this when I heard that AJ wasn't on and they're going to let Gabe just do it himself. It just, there's some shows that you have a host, but it's an interactive show, where you've got other things going on and you're right, you've got either a studio audience or you've got other people in the audience. Or something to react to, but it sounded like they're just doing this stuff in post production in a 21 booth.
Exactly. I mean, think about television for.
Yeah.
Think about any other of even like pool when you're watching billiards on television. There's two people. There's the play-by-play and the expert. You know what I mean? You have to have someone who knows what they're talking about and someone else who can lead you in and out of the action. And especially when they're trying to incorporate humor, you need to have someone that it could be your straight man who can laugh or whatever. And it's just really awkward to me. And of course, it's all about the poker. But really, unless you got someone there at least helping you with the train of thought and the humor, it's just really dry to me. And not that I won't watch it because I'm very interested in how they play and some of the names. And it's important for the magazine for me to know who's who when we're out there in Vegas or something, or looking for content. So I'll watch it and get through it, but it's certainly not entertaining anymore.
I'll introduce you to my friend Johnny Walker. He'll help you get through some of the bad stuff.
Well, what is entertaining, though, is the poker. And at first, I want to thank Doc Frank for emailing me and reminding me about this hand. It was the second hand of the season, and Vanessa Selbst, who will be on our show in the future, but it's a pre-taped interview, so I won't be able to ask her about this, but she's in the hand. Pretty much everyone bought in for $200,000 to start the hand. And I want to hear what you think of the way this hand was played from everyone, really. It's remarkable to me that they had about two to three amateurs at the table because two of them were definitely amateurs, and one of them is that Silly Bands guy with deep stacks. So I don't know if he's an amateur. I guess he is.
Was he wearing Silly Bands?
He was wearing them, and he had his little deep stacks logo on his shirt.
All
too,
right, good,
so.
good.
So those three guys were at the table, and then the rest were decent pros, like Doyle and Vanessa Selbst, Antonio Esfandiari, David Pete. So there were big names at the table, okay? And given everyone's style, there's certain ways to play. And, of course, people could have had particular approaches to this hand. They thought things were going to turn out a different way. But here's how it went. One of the amateurs was under the gun and limped with 3-3. Now, I don't mind the limp. I mean, you could raise there, you could fold there, you could do all kinds of stuff with that.
Yeah, you can make a case. But
you can make a case for all actions there. So 3-3 is fine. it gets to Doyle, and Doyle raises with seven of spades, five of spades, which I absolutely love this.
Yeah.
Because, really, he's in the cutoff.
Automatic raising hand.
Well, I mean, if you're going to play it, that's the kind of hand where if you're in position,
And... I love playing those kind of hands. Yeah. You know, as long as you're careful with them. But, yeah. But I like raising them, particularly in the position he's in, because when they hit, you know, people don't necessarily put you on them.
Exactly.
If they don't hit, you're still got the advantage of being the one who's raising. But, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. And I totally agree. And, of course, you know, we all know that Doyle would be, you know, he knows how to play these things. So, obviously, he knows what he's doing. And he never really gets out of line too often on these things. So, you would think a raise from him is going to be big cards anyway. Right. So, anyway, he raises, and he's in the cutoff. Vanessa Selbst, on the button, calls his raise. Now, I think the blinds are like 300 and 600, so it was a standard raise or whatever. Maybe it was like 2,000 or whatever. So she calls with queen-queen. So you got a limper, a raiser, and you're on the button with queen-queen, and she calls.
All right,
so now it gets to Antonio in the blinds. He has nothing.
Oh, man.
What was that?
I'm allergic to Antonio. I'm sorry.
Oh,
right past me.
That scared the hell out of me. All right, so Antonio's
you're
in the blinds.
You just heard it.
He's got 9 of diamonds, 10 of diamonds.
Man, this is a beautiful hand.
So he calls. So we got basically gets to the 3-3 guy. He calls. All right. So now we're looking at four players to the flop.
Wow, I like this. We got a baby pair. We got a solid pair, and we got two good speculative hands.
Yeah, two suited connectors or one gapper on one of them, but basically a connector, and four players to the flop. So ideally, this is exactly what, you know, someone wants with suited connectors, because you got enough people in the pot, and you know, but really right now, and the 3-3 is loving it, because if he flops a set, you know, no one's going to put him on that hand. Maybe you could put him on the hand, it's pretty obvious, but I think it is, but you know, really, it's still, he's getting the right odds to call now, and blah blah blah. So
yeah, this is really a flop hand here. Whoever hits this flop is going to win this.
Exactly. All right, so just a quick recap. 3-3 for the amateur, queen-queen for Vanessa, 7-5 suited of spades for Doyle, and 9-10 of diamonds for Antonio. Flop comes 9-4 Trey.
Ooh.
And one diamond. So now Antonio has top pair with a backdoor flush draw. The amateur who's after him to act has a set of threes.
All right.
Doyle actually has a gut shot. And there may have been a spade on there. I don't remember, but that really doesn't matter. And then, of course, the overpair, queen-queen.
Mm-hmm.
So now Antonio's first to act, and the pot was like 20,000 or so, maybe a little more. He bets 17,000 into this pot. Okay, so apparently the raise was a little more than 2,000 when Doyle might have made it 4,500 if I remember correctly now. But anyway, the pot was 23,000, something like that. Antonio bets 17,000 with this top pair, and now the set of threes calls. All right. Obviously, Doyle folds, and now Vanessa raises to 68,000. All right, that gets Antonio out of the way. Now it gets to the amateur, who pops it 100,000, and he does it out of turn. Though I forgot to say this, because
before Antonio
acts, he goes 100,000 and 100,000 more or whatever, and so Antonio is like, well, that makes my decision easy.
See ya.
So he folds.
I think it should also make Vanessa's decision easy.
Yeah, I especially with an amateur and the way the hand was played. So it's funny because Frank emailed me about this, and he says at this point, David P., you know, known as Viffer, who's not even in the hand, says, you've been raised to Vanessa, almost implying that she's beat, you know what I mean? Which I don't think he should have said anything, but... So the guy makes it like 100 grand. I think it's 100 grand more, obviously, because I don't think you can make just 100 when it's a $68,000 raise. So I think he makes it 100 grand more, which he does. So now she tanks a little bit. And then she can beat, what hands can she really beat? She could beat jacks. She could beat ace nine or whatever, any nine with a rag or whatever. She could beat 10-10. But really, what can she beat? And she shoves all in for her entire 200 grand. And the guy, of course, snap calls.
Woo.
And she loses it. Now, really, I mean, this. Now, here's the thing. Now, I would fold that hand. I mean, maybe she thought she was pot committed with the 68 already out there. but what this amateur can't be making a move on her. He's an amateur, and she's one of the best players in the world. And I just thought, what exactly is she, you know?
Well, I think he could make a move, and I'm not going to discount that. But what I think it kind of adds up. Here's a guy that limped under the gun pre-flop.
Right.
Called a bet.
Right.
On this flop. And then before, didn't pay attention to the action and immediately said raise as if he was just sitting there waiting, hoping somebody bet so he could raise.
Yeah.
And I don't think you do that with any of the hands that she can beat.
Exactly. And it's clearly genuine because he made a mistake and he did it so quickly that it's clearly genuine and he couldn't wait to get his money in, showing all kinds of tells with that. And she shoved. And I just couldn't believe she shoved. And I know she's real aggressive in tournaments and, you know, we'll get to that when we have her on the show and stuff. But, wow, it was just incredible to me. And she got a bunch of it back later on. It was only the first week, so she's probably still on this week when it comes up. And, you know, who knows what she's going to do. I think she gets it all in again. I think they showed that in the previews. But, really, second hand? You haven't even really played with this guy that much. You know?
Yeah, that's tough.
Wow. Yep. 200,000. I really thought that she should have raised pre-flop. I thought that was the... When you have multiple up and you have guys behind you still to act.
Well, you know, here, I can defend that because you got this amateur under the gun. I always like the under the gun limp is always a little scary.
Yeah.
And then you've got one of the greatest players to ever play the game raising. You know, I can make a case for it both, but I kind of like disguising your hand there and being willing to get rid of it on the flop. I know some people out there, oh my gosh, how can you not protect Queen, Scott? You're terrible. I agree. I'm terrible, but I could see, you know, taking a flyer on that and seeing how the hand developed. And if you get a flop like this, which is I think what she was hoping for, then you could be aggressive like that.
Yeah, it's just
tells that the extra information she got.
Here's the thing, okay? The under the gun limp. When you say it's scary, it means that he has ace-ace or king king. If it's scary, that's what makes it scary. So you're beat already. So why not find out now? And re-raise pre-flop and save your money. If he shoves at that point, you might be able to get away from it. But you know what I mean? Otherwise, either she's losing to a set or she's losing to ace-ace-king-king there. So either way, she's losing to the limper.
Yeah, or he could have a hand like he had, and then, you know, you could check. If he checks the flop, then you could probably push somebody off a hand like that. I don't know. I think you're stronger to... With the action the way it was, I think you're stronger calling and reassessing on the flop.
Man, it was remarkable. I really thought that this hand was misplayed from beginning to end. I really thought she should have re-raised and then gone isolated in position against, which she would have taken it down if she re-raises. If she makes it 12 to 14 grand pre-flop, she takes on a tidy little $20,000 pot and moves on. Instead, she's down 200 grand from, and most of that money goes to an amateur, which, you know, she could probably get it back from him later. But
you know, that's another thing to consider in this, too. I mean... When you're sitting in a tournament or a cash game, I mean, one of the things that I don't think people think about a lot is where your chips go.
Yeah.
And if you're giving them to somebody that you know you can probably get them back from, then you can take a few more chances than you would if you're giving them to a solid, aggressive player that's going to be very hard to get them back from, or you're going to want to play a little tighter. So, you know, maybe she thought, you know, hey, I've got an overpair. You know, maybe he's making a move with something, and if I'm wrong, then, you know, the person at the table who I want to have the most chips will have them, and I'll get it back. So, I don't know. I mean, she certainly has, as we serve at the top of the show, she knows what she's doing more than we do.
Yeah, exactly. I just, when I watched it, I thought, oh, my God. I felt so bad, but I thought, you know, and she's like, yeah, can I have another 200, please? And I just thought, oh, my God. Just waving your fingers saying, give me another 200,000. Oh, man, I would just kill to have that kind of money. It's crazy.
You know, I had kind of a similar thing in a tournament I played last night, which we'll talk about on a future show, so I won't give too much away from it. But, you know, I made some moves against a woman that was playing very weird, I thought.
Okay.
And, you know what, I'll take a shot with her because, you know, if this is one of the times that she's playing in subpar hands, then I'll win. And if this is one of the times that she's playing a stronger hand, at least she has my chips. And she's not going anywhere, and I can take another shot at her later. So, you know, I don't know if that's right or not, but that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. It's just that I don't want to give over $200,000 to somebody who could literally get up and leave at that moment if he wants, or, you know. So it's just.
Hey, we know you, Chris. You don't even give $2 to someone. So
it's true. I don't. Hey, I gave you action in the last hand of the home game. and it actually made me lose like five
actually,
bucks on the day.
It cost me the hand, but that's all right.
I know, I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. I should have re-raised and given you the whole pot. But
you know, folks should give you credit, Chris, when you critique these high-stakes poker hands, because you are a World Series of Poker casher, as we've determined last week. And in our feedback session this week, Alan Stewart, who writes in often, he agrees. He says, it is a cash. But he didn't just stop on the email with that, Chris. He went to the Hendon Mob website, you know, which has been your life goal since you were like a little four-year-old watching Rounders for the first time years before it even came out, which is pretty awesome. And he's like, oh, my gosh, who sent in that photo? Faso? He says, at least go with a fresh one from the Blue Shark Optics. CC looks like a freaking stalker in the photo that's on there now.
Actually, yeah, Mike Faso did take that photo.
He took it?
Yeah.
But you sent it in.
But I sent it in, yeah. Well, I was like, hey, I'm going to check the Hendon Mob out. And then it's like, picture unavailable. I'm like, well, you know, I'll give you one. It's like the only time I'm ever going to be on this thing. I might as well have my photo on there.
See, you know, when I get on there, I'm going to send like a picture of Fabio's brother or something. I'm going to have a little fun with it. And then, tattoo from Fantasy Island.
It was a serious photo. That was when I was at the World Series, and at the time I was doing well. I was at a pretty decent stack at the time. It was real early in the tournament, but I was like chip leader at my table, and I was like, "Faso, take a picture of this quick." And I've been waiting 4 years to use it. I was hoping I was going to use that photo for that cash, but it didn't happen that way. But you know, one thing I did want to say when people started talking about this, whether it was a real World Series cash or not. You know, Faso at the home game said no, and I said, you know, you go on the actual World Series site itself, and they have a category for World Series caches, and then they have a category for circuit caches, and I am not in the
World Series. So you're on the JV team, according.
Yeah, according to the World Series themselves, I'm on the JV team, which is fine. I don't really care.
I'm not even on the freshman team, so you should be proud for what you have there.
It doesn't matter to me. I was just happy I made money and had a good showing in a tournament that I never get a chance to play. So, but yeah, it is kind of a scary photo, you know. But I don't want to put a photo of my sunglasses on, you know, because I don't, you know, you can't see my face. So,
all the more reason to say my name is sunglasses.
But I'm glad he thinks it's a cash. I appreciate it.
All right, well, we got a very, very interesting mailbag this week. It comes from Mike in Tampa, not Pastor Mike James in Tampa. I don't know if he's related to Rick James. That would be cool. he wants to talk about getting into a player's head here, and I'm going to be interested to hear what you think about this because I know you like to play these kind of games. I am A B C D E F when it comes to poker, but you've got a little more to your game than I do. So he set it up with a lot of stuff. You know, the show is going to go too long if I read the whole thing, but I'll summarize it for you. He's playing a six-handed sit and go, and he raised under the gun with pocket jacks. He gets called by a straightforward player on the button, and gets a rainbow flop of deuce 7-10. Oh, I'm sorry for Dave from San Jose. That's 10-7 deuce rainbow. Makes a continuation bet. And his opponent moves all in. Hmm. All right, so that's the setup. So Mike says he uses a tactic that has worked for him in the past. Tries to set his opponent at ease with standard poker whining about how sick this is. And how I just threw away 900 units. He says this kind of talking sometimes puts somebody at ease. Gets their guard down. And he says, as I'm all but throwing my cards in the muck, as I said, then he makes his move. Asking, okay, sir, I'm going to throw away my pocket jacks, he says, Chris. There's just one more thing I need to know. Are your pocket queens red or black? She's not playing Wesley Snipes because Wesley Snipes is in jail, so it's a legitimate question. He throws his pocket jacks into the muck face up, and he says he watched his opponent's practice power face give just the slightest look of stunned silence. He still hasn't moved at all. 10 seconds later, as the dealer pushes in the pot and finally says, okay, they were black. Throws the queen of clubs, the queen of spades face up on the table. But I just have to know how the hell you knew I had queens and that they were the same color. Now, Mike says he just smiled and says something about his posture and how he holds his cards and some other nonsense that he made up. But he says, now, from the rest of the tournament, this guy is not the same solid player, Chris. Every time he's in a pot together, he seems determined to play fancy or sneaky, trying to throw me off his scent. Boy, I wish some people could throw me off their scent. He says, with this distraction, I take several nice pots from him, and he goes out in third place. He says, I don't think I made a spectacular read here. In fact, he thinks it was probably a pretty easy read. But because my opponent isn't thinking that way, all he sees is some guy in a fedora sitting across the table, peering into his soul.
I wish I had a fedora.
Do you really?
Yeah, I think they're cool.
Hmm.
I don't know if I can pull it off or not. But what? What'd you say?
Earl Bruce, the old Ohio State coach, used to wear a fedora.
Oh, yeah. I think they're cool.
I think he was probably the last person to ever wear a fedora. Him and Mike James from Tampa.
I'm Mick James, bitch.
All right, so what do you think about this?
Well, I think that it's a coin flip, really. I mean, either he's got the hand you think he does, or he doesn't, and it'll work if he does, and it won't if he doesn't. So, you know what I mean? To me, it seems – I mean, obviously, you've got a lot of hands you can choose from, but since you're not angle shooting and holding on to those jacks in case you get a reaction that's, you know he has, you know, 8-8 or something, you know what I mean, and then you hold on, then, you know, what the hell? It's fun, and it seems like it may work. It's just, you know – and especially in a six-handed sit-and-go, I would think that you don't have a lot of time with this guy anyway. Whereas in a regular tournament where you might be sitting with somebody for hours and hours like we did at the World Series, you know, then it might really be handy. But that said, very interesting. I mean, I find that pretty funny. You know, and of course, you know, if he's wrong, the guy just mucks and laughs at him, and then you can move on, I guess.
Yeah,
so I guess the reaction you get...
No downside to that, I guess. I
mean, right.
Just telling you're an idiot and showing you a bluff or something, in which case, you know, there's
something
out of that as well, too.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very interesting. I like that idea. I mean, there are all different ways to get information out of people, and that's one that I really never really even encountered. So that's pretty funny.
Well, you know, one of the things I like about this hand is getting information without risking anything else. I mean, he's already made a decision that he's not going to call here, but... rather than just muck and not get anything else out of it, he tried to find a way to squeeze some value out of the spot that he lost chips in.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't think I always think of. Now, I'm not a talker at the table. You know that. I don't like to chat with people in the hand, which probably makes me great. I'm going to win the World Series this year because you're not allowed to talk to me. So I'm used to that. But so I don't think I could pull this off. But you know, it's a good lesson in that, you know, even some stuff that seems kind of silly on the outside actually could pay dividends for you.
Yeah. No, it's interesting how people come up with different ways to get people to relax, you know, or to tell you the truth or whatever and get inside someone's head. And that's pretty cool. That's pretty original. I like it.
Now, I wonder if you're in a place that just had some collusion soft play going on. If they were called the floor over, how do you know they were black? Are you cheating?
That's pretty funny.
Hey, Robert De Niro come over, throw you out, put you in a vice.
Put your head in a vice.
That's a little risky run there.
All right, man.
Mike, we appreciate this great mailbag, and we're going to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. They're now available in the Annie Up store at www.annieupstore.com. And I think you'll agree that both the Black Queens and the Red Queens look quite fetching on these cards.
Fetching. Our hotline is 813-448-1120. We'd like you to call it and leave us an interesting message. And if you do and we use it on our show, and we've never used it before, because otherwise we're angle shooters, we'll give you something really cool. This week's clip clump comes from Player X. I love the name. Player X from Parts Unknown. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, and I gotta pause right here, too, because, you know, we're a week off of freshly being accused of angle shooting and not giving out swag, right?
Right.
My little antennas are going up here on Player X. How do I know who Player X is when they, if you can see me now, I have little antennas on my head. How do we know who Player X is when he or she claims a prize? I guess it's a he, right? I guess we know that much, at least.
Yeah, we hear the voice.
So here's the thing. If you want to claim your prize, and you are going to get a prize, you're going to have to identify the phone number that you called in with.
Yeah.
That's the only way we're going to know you're legit.
Yeah. Good point.
Of course, then again, that doesn't really solve whether I know your name or not. We're shutting down one angle, but there's another angle, too. It's a nice Ocelles.
Hey, guys. This is Player X from Parts Unknown with a little poker question for you. Let's say I live in a site or in a state where online gambling, any form of gambling, is illegal, and I win a free roll on one of the online sites. Then in the tournament that I won a seat to, I cash or win that tournament and end up gambling with the money I won from that tournament. Now, I never put a dime on the site. I'm playing with basically house money. Does this mean I'm still breaking the law, or am I good to play that money until it's gone or until I cash it out? Anyway, love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
That's a good question, and I'm glad you're on the show so you can answer it.
Well, I am no I. Nelson Rose. I'm not a gaming law expert here. But I'm fairly certain that it doesn't matter how you get your money. Once you wager it, it is a wager.
Yes.
So it's the same thing if somebody transfers you money, I guess. You know, how's that any different than winning it in a free roll? It's still money at that point. You're actually wagering something of value, and that's generally going to get you in trouble in Washington State, which is the only place that bans online poker. So I don't think there's a legitimate angle to shoot here on this. If you win that money in a free roll, I guess you can go the money laundering route if you want. Send it to a buddy, have them cash it out for you. I don't know what you're going to do to avoid being illegal. Not whether anything happens to you is a whole other thing.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. What's he win?
All right. Well, Player X, if you can correctly identify your phone number and give us your name so I can double-check my swag shelf database.
Yes.
I'll be happy to send you a quality T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear. It sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com.
Hey, you know, we got some housekeeping stuff. No more crew stuff, but you know, we'll do a show anyway from the cruise, right?
Yeah, next week's show we'll do it live on the boat, and I'm hoping we get our Canadian listeners to be guests this time.
You know, that'd be cool.
We had some folks, some listeners on the show, and you know, these Canadians are driving all the way to the ship, Chris.
That's crazy.
Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You know, Florida's a big state. Yeah. We're bemoaning the fact that we have to drive to Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
We're in Florida. This guy's in a whole other country. Driving down. So I'm hoping we get them on the show next week, but we'll let everybody know how much fun we have on the cruise.
And it'll be a legitimate show. Like last time we did this, we just had the interview and said, okay, we'll see you later as a quick 24-minute show or something. But we're going to actually do a full show next week from the ship. So make sure you stay tuned. And, you know, while we're actually loading up and driving down there, we're actually going to miss our free roll.
Yeah, yeah, right. And we should mention that.
Satellite, sorry.
Next week's show will be posted late Saturday night. So
yeah, that's true.
Don't freak out on Friday. Hey, I can't download it because hey, it won't be there.
It won't be this late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Look for it.
Take the wife, take the husband out to dinner. Enjoy your Friday. We'll be there.
But we're gonna miss our satellite, the first one, right? Because we're gonna be loading up the truck and drive, making that drive that we are dreading so much.
Yeah, you know, if I was one of those Lee Child kind of pros, I would get one of those little air card things and.
And play in the street.
Take my computer with me, and while you're driving the big old truck down there, I'll just be sitting there grinding to win a dollar tournament. But I'm not one of those people. So, but yes, March 6th, that's Sunday. Actually, it's noon though. So, you know what? We're not leaving until later.
Yeah, I think we're gonna be busy.
Yeah, the lawn's not gonna mow itself, right?
And we're gonna be loading up that truck too, I think.
All right, we'll see. But anyhow, noon Eastern, March 6th will be our first satellite of Apes this year. I got word from my PokerStars contact that they will be loading those tournaments this week, so they should be up very soon, hopefully before noon Eastern on Sunday. It'll be our first satellite. It's $1.10. They'll give away as many $5.50 seats for our March 16th event, which is stud, as there are people in the event. And get this, Chris. You know, our March 26th is going to be no limit. That's going to be our event two this year. Rant from the forum, who just loves to drive me crazy, and I love that he drives to drive me crazy. He is going to give two seats away himself.
Remarkable. Are you still there?
I was just seeing how much pause you could do there. You're hanging there for a while.
I'm just shocked. I mean, he's giving away $11.
Things there.
Yeah. Huh? He's giving away $11.
He's giving away two seats. I think he's going to do this monthly. So if you want one of those two seats, he wants you to post a hand on the forum, and he's looking for high-quality hands. No skimming for free seat hands.
Skimming for a free seat. Trolling for seatage.
Yeah. Not one of these people that send the hand a week. Yeah, I had ace pre-flop and pushed all in and got called by seven deuce and was out. Is that a hand of the week? No, it's not a hand of the week.
I'm going to post some hands, I think.
It's true, yeah. We might win ourselves, right?
What the hell, yeah. It's not like McDonald's and I'm an employee of the company. I mean, you know what? If I want to get a seat for free, I'm going to get one.
Yeah, if you want to win Monopoly, we can win Monopoly.
That's right.
So you have to post by March 16th, and all the details on his little rant giveaway are on the forum at anteupmagazine.com/forum, so go check that out.
Also, you know, our store is open. Did you know that?
Yeah, I do know that. We've been selling some stuff, so we appreciate all of our, hopefully it's our listeners buying stuff. We appreciate those sales, and then get over to anteupstore.com and buy some more stuff. Just added a couple more vendors, and very soon we'll be adding some more Annie Up stuff. Working on that.
Yeah, love the Annie Up logo stuff. And, of course, we got all kinds of other products on it, too. It's not just Annie Up stuff, so take a look at that. But right now I want you to clear off some of the room on your Annie Up news desk.
All right, Iowa is the fourth state this year to introduce an interstate online poker bill, joining New Jersey, Florida, and California. And check out your favorite website here pretty soon as we are waiting word on the New Jersey, whether Governor Christie there will sign it or veto it.
Yeah.
Should happen by the time people are listening to this.
PokerStars has launched two new poker European poker tours, one in Belgium and one in Portugal. Both have inaugural events April 14th to the 17th. Wow.
Yeah, I need to check my geography, but it's kind of a bummer that you got to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
I would think you'd want to get on those little high-speed trains over there. And,
well, if you bust out of one, you might be able to.
Oh, that's true. You probably could.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, PokerStars is expanding everywhere. Love it.
Unbelievable.
All right. Then finally this week, 441 Productions is out as the producer of the World Series of Poker's television coverage. Bluff has confirmed. And they say that Poker Productions has been hired instead. It's unknown whether Norman Chad and Lon McCarron will remain the on-air talent. Though Phil Hellmuth has been mentioned in connection with an on-air gig for the World Series.
See, now here we go. You know, Poker Productions in charge. Who knows? Maybe we'll just have Norman Chad in the booth by himself, which would really suck. So, you know, I mean, that's what I'm getting at. You know, oh, my God. Can you imagine just Phil Hellmuth in the booth all by himself? Good God. I would not listen to that.
And then what do you do with Phil Hellmuth is at the table? Is he going to comment on his own hands? That would be awesome.
Here's where I played a great hand right here.
Well, you know, you watch a lot more poker on TV than I do, but but I've always been a fan of how 441 has done the World Series. I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not a fan of what Maury does with Poker Productions and some of their stuff, but interesting that one's out and the other one's in. So,
wonder what'll happen there. I wonder what kind of changes there will be, or if their ESPN just says stick with the same formula. We just like the you know, the cost of what you charge us rather than 441, you know, or whatever. So. Wow.
The other thing, too, is Norman and Lon are like such an institution with those.
Yeah.
That franchise already. It's going to be very awkward not to have them doing it. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
I'm sure they'll renew.
This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Last week we were down in Palm Beach where Chris was cashing in the horse event and I was grinding out a living. Making a little bacon.
Can you live on $40 a day?
I absolutely can.
Okay.
I absolutely can. That's a lot of chicken rice and tilapia. While you're doing that, I also, when I was getting beat up at the Cash Devils before I rallied late at night, I wandered upstairs and found Nolan Dalla just hanging out.
Nolan Dalla.
Just relaxing, watching the dogs run around the track. Except there weren't any dogs at that point, so he was probably just picturing dogs running around the track. And, you know, we talked about sitting down and interviewing him because, you know, I've been following some of the stuff that he writes online every once in a while. And it's always very insightful. And I know he's a guy that has a lot of opinions. He's been around. He's seen a lot. And so I got the chance to talk to him. And I got to say, it was even a better interview than I was planning.
Yeah, that was one of the downfalls of me caching and playing for so long was that I didn't get to sit in with you and talk to him. And I mean, I talk to him all the time anyway. We're always emailing each other about World Series stuff or results or whatever, or even the Hall of Fame and stuff. But yeah, that was one of the things that, you know, I would have liked to have sat down. But, you know, he's a great – and you got to remind everybody who he is. I mean, he is the media coordinator for the World Series of Poker and a great author. He even wrote that One of a Kind, the Stu Unger story. And that was a great book. And so, I mean, he's just a font of knowledge and great to have on the show. So I'm really looking forward to hearing this.
Okay, I'm here with Nolan Dalla, media director of the World Series of Poker. Also does the media for most, if not all, of the World Series of Poker circuit events, too, right? And as well as other tournaments. And in the 7 minutes of the year that he's not doing all that, writes some very sharp commentary for poker websites and poker magazines, and we'll get to that soon. But right now we're at the Palm Beach Kennel Club for the first World Series of Poker event, not at a casino.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about how this is different than some of the other ones that you've been to.
Yeah, you're quite right. This is our seventh season of the World Series of Poker circuits, and most people know about the long history of the World Series of Poker going back 42 years. But I think the World Series of Poker circuits is a great concept, which is essentially to take the World Series, the event that everyone knows in Las Vegas, and take it on the road and take it to places all over the country. And, you know, for the last, again, 7 years, we've been going around the country primarily to Harrah's properties. People are familiar with our casinos, perhaps in San Diego, Atlantic City, Lake Tahoe, New Orleans, and some other places. But for the first time this year, we've decided to come down into Florida. And one of the reasons is the poker laws here have changed. Certainly, it's much better for poker players, and we really wanted to be in Florida. And we were approached by the Palm Beach Kennel Club here in West Palm Beach, Florida. Great staff, a great facility, obviously a great poker tradition, even though poker, you know, I guess, is somewhat new in the area as far as high-stakes poker and tournament poker. We've been received with open arms here, and I anticipate this becoming a regular annual thing, a World Series of Poker circuit stop here in South Florida at the West Palm Beach Kennel Club.
Now, as far as other circuit events, the first time that's been somewhere, has this compared similar to it in numbers or even the feeling in the room?
You know, every circuit event is very different. I mean, I'm privileged to go around the country and travel to many of them. You know, we had our first one in Chicago a couple of years ago. I remember they literally broke the doors down, I mean, getting in there. But, you know, we were, you know, 30 minutes from downtown Chicago, and that's a whole different environment than, say, San Diego or New Orleans. And here, you know, I don't think we really knew what to expect. One of the things that this staff did, and I'll call them out by name, Noah Carbone and Joe Conti, who are the poker people here at the casino, they only had 2 months to turn this thing around. In other words, once it was approved, we made the announcement, and you know, I don't know if anybody out there is familiar with how difficult it is to run a tournament, hire staff, get chips, train the people, go through the gaming regulations, get the tables, and then publicity and get players into the seats. It's not an easy thing. You don't just snap your fingers and say, we're going to have a poker tournament, people show up. It doesn't work that way. And we did find a good spot here in the calendar. South Florida is obviously a very popular vacation destination for a lot of people this time of year, meaning in mid to late February. And so it really did fit nicely in the schedule, and I think the numbers have been strong here for the first week or so.
Now, another new event this year will be at Harrah's Chester up in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a lot like Florida here. It's a new, kind of a new poker environment where it's a lot more of excitement going on now. How do you see these two states playing a role in probably the big poker states now, which are probably Nevada, California, and to a lesser degree maybe New Jersey, Mississippi. Are these two states going to play a bigger role in the coming future, do you think?
Oh, that's a really good I think you've made a you really phrase that as a question, but I think you should phrase it as a statement because you're quite right. Just the population base alone of Pennsylvania and Florida, obviously, you know, the numbers are there. You know, fairly affluent states, big cities, a lot of diversity in the states, and certainly, you know, Florida. I'll talk about Florida first, very, very briefly. You know, obviously there was poker down here, you know, with these, you know, small limit games for a lot of years. And anytime I came down here and would not so much play but observe the games that were going on, there was obviously a great poker tradition that people really wanted to play poker down here. So when the limits were lifted and we have full-scale poker and poker tournaments, I think everyone expected and knew that Florida was going to be a great market. I think that's only going to improve in the future. Anybody who wants to challenge that statement, I'd like to hear their reasoning, because it's just a great market. And the reasons are obvious. There's obviously some money here. A lot of people have, you know, disposable time. There's, you know, a recreational environment here. It really goes hand in hand with poker. Pennsylvania, a little different, obviously, being in the Northeast. You know, New Jersey being next door has really had the lock, and Connecticut, you know, with Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun. But they've had the lock on gaming in the Northeast for so long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've wondered what took many of these states so long to catch up and, you know, change their gaming laws to allow things like poker and full-scale casino gambling. You know, it's just, you know, this is 2011. It's hard to imagine, you know, we have laws on the books that are dating back to the, you know, the 1800s. And really, that's still in effect on a great part of the country. And fortunately, states like Florida, states like Pennsylvania have seen the revenue that can be generated from gaming and poker. And obviously, the public wants this as well. And they're proving that by showing up at these racetracks and casinos around both states.
Now let's talk about the World Series of Poker main out in Nevada. You've been involved in that for several years. Obviously, when Harrah's bought it now Caesars, a lot of changes have come, and even the last couple of years has been a lot of changes. Talk a little bit about how it's changed since you first became involved with it to where it is now and where you might think it's going to be going in the future.
Yeah, you know, I go back to the Binion's Horseshoe days, and of course I remember when it was, you know, in one room, and the room wasn't much bigger than a, you know, I don't know, movie theater. You know, it was not a very large room or space for poker, you know, then of course, the moneymaker effect in 2003, and everything changed, and I was fortunate to be what we call the center of the hurricane. I saw the changes firsthand, and I think Harrah's, you know, has managed the growth, I think, very well. I mean, there's been some bumps in the road. There's been some learning experiences from everybody in the staff, everybody in the company, but I think each year, most people that come out to the series every year, yourself included, you notice that things get a little better. It's not perfect. It's still got some ways to go, but I do believe that most people enjoy their experience. Otherwise, why do they keep coming back? I mean, people do come back year to year, and everyone looks forward to the World Series of Poker. And, you know, as far as the future, where is the World Series going to go? I think it continues to get bigger, although the growth probably won't be like we saw 3 or 4 years ago. But, you know, we have World Series of Poker Europe now, which we will have 7 gold bracelet events in Cannes. So when I say Canes, I don't speak French, but C-A-N-N-E-S, okay, it's Confrance. We've had it in Europe, in London, the last 3 years, and it's going to be exciting to go to France for the first time and have gold bracelets over there. And the reception over in Europe, you want to talk about exciting, you know, to have the World Series over in Europe, that's really something. And we've seen people come from literally all over the world to come to those events over in Europe as well. And I think down the road you'll see things like World Series of Poker Latin America, maybe World Series of Poker Asia. I think that's around the corner. Who knows how long it'll take to come, but that's inevitable, I believe.
Now, one of the things that poker room managers tell us all the time lately is that there's just so many tournaments on the schedule now. Everybody is trying to do tournaments now, and they're either bumping up against each other or they're overlapping. Do you see that with the circuit events now? Because now we've got so many circuit events that it's almost back to year-round. You can travel on the circuit, never even have a house, and be playing in a circuit event every day. Do you worry about diluting the brand ever?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that, you know, first of all, let me say who wins in this you know, in the expansion of tournaments and the really proliferation of events around the world, the ones who win are the players, because now they have more choices. And back, you know, many years ago, you'd find one or two tournaments a month maybe, and then those casinos, those respective properties that hosted events, had a monopoly, and they could charge whatever they wanted for hotels or the rake or, you know, all these things. It was pretty kind of a monopoly situation, and now casinos and hosts are now forced to be very competitive. I mean, we have to provide a better service than just saying, hey, we have a poker tournament. You have to provide, you know, maybe discounted hotel rates, food coupons, or, you know, or whatever the, you know, obviously good service and good action. That's important, maybe the most important thing. But I do believe that the players are the ones who win with the, you know, with the expansion of tournaments. And, you know, as long as people continue to come in the door at each tournament, for example, the World Series of Poker and the circuits seem to be doing pretty well. I think most people would look at our numbers and say we've, even despite the recession, the economic challenges of this environment, we've weathered the storm pretty well. Other tournament circuits, I think, have done pretty well too. And I'll call out a couple of them, like the Heartland Poker Tour. I know that some of the people who run that, and they do a very nice job throughout, particularly the Midwest, and seem to be doing very well in their environment. World Poker Tour and European Poker Tour, and you could go to each one and say what are their numbers. But right now, you know, if it was just one tournament being held, we'd have bigger numbers. Yeah, mm-hmm. some of the tournaments will feed off others and dilute the pools to a certain extent. But again, the best thing is that the players have a lot to choose from now. They can always play poker almost, you know, 365 days a year. That's a good thing.
One of the things that people always ask is, should the main event be more than $10,000? I'm interested in what you think on that, because it draws so many people at that price point. And I know Harrah's or Caesars now, that, you know, they've added other bigger money events to it.
Yeah.
But what's your personal opinion? Should the main event stay at $10,000?
Well, I think it should. It's let me say this. You never say never. I mean, in 100 years, $10,000 won't be worth what it is today. So, I mean, inevitably, there will be some that will be looked at some point. I don't think right now or any time in the next few years or foreseeable future you'll see that raised. And I personally am in favor of keeping it the same, and here's why. This tournament, the World Series of Poker Main Event, is not really... I don't say it's not about the money, because that sounds ridiculous, but it's about something much more than that. In fact, most people that come to the World Series, if you ask them, do you expect to win? Let's be frank. Most of them don't expect to win. They expect to play. They want to cash. They want to, you know, go as deep as they can. It's about the experience. It's about going to this thing once a year that takes place. I mean, it's a Christmas, in a sense, for poker players. They look forward to this thing with great anticipation, come and enjoy the experience. And I think that by raising the price of admission, you are denying a certain element of the poker community its opportunity to enjoy that experience. And I think as many people that can fit in the door and come and, you know, participate, I think that's great. I think that's what the World Series, I stress World Series of Poker, is all about, allowing as many people to chase their dream as possible. And I hope that's always the case.
Now, you probably worked pretty closely with Jeffrey Pollack in the past, and he has started his own thing now. Andy Duke's the commissioner of it. And as exciting as a new format is, it also draws some critics that, you know, why are we shutting out? Poker is a game for the masses, you know, where you can go, anybody can buy in and play, and this is something that people have to qualify in. Do you have any opinions on where that's going to go, and do you prefer just a direct buy-in kind of event, or is there room for these kind of super championship kind of
things? Well, it remains to be seen if there's a market for it. There's a market for it in terms of public interest. I mean, television's the driving vehicle on that question. I mean, if people want to tune in and watch, and, you know, there's already television shows that show, you know, quote unquote the superstars every week. They're on high stakes poker and you know, things like that. You see it, you know, you can always turn on and see, you know, the same, I don't want to say the same names over and over, but you know what I'm talking about. It's always out there. And then the World Series, I think, is something different, as are some of the other tours, allowing, you know, anybody the opportunity, in a sense of democracy, to allowing everybody the ability to participate and win and play. the new poker tour that's been proposed. I wish Jeffrey very well. I worked with him and for him for a number of years, and I have great respect for Jeffrey. I know he, you know, is dedicated to the game, and I hope he does well. But again, we're going to do what we do best, which is the World Series of Poker, inviting, you know, people to come from all over the world. And if other people want to emulate that or try their own tours, so be it, and good luck. But we're here to stay, and nobody's going to take away what the Gold Bryson means to poker players.
Now, ever since the UIGEA, Harrah's has not allowed. It's made it a little more difficult for online qualifiers, and the fields have gone down a little bit. Now, you wrote a recently intelligent commentary, I thought, on why the whole move for a federal regulation failed this last year, kind of placing the blame at a number of people's different feet. So let's kind of walk through that. Let's start with Congress. What happened in Congress from and your point of view to derail?
Yeah, you have a good memory for the thing that I wrote. And what I did is I called this this recent article that is for Poker News Daily, I called it the blame game. and it was basically a pointing out all of the different institutions, people, forces that, if you will, that were against us and who essentially derailed the movement to legalize online poker in the United States. And when I say legalize, I mean legalize where you can operate in sight within the United States. It's not illegal. I don't want to make that real clear. So, my article was geared towards that. And I took a very aggressive approach because I think that one thing we in the poker community are somewhat docile. We're afraid to ruffle feathers and maybe call out people for being with us. Well, I tore off the niceties and said, hey, here's the people who stood in our way and essentially killed the movement. And frankly, the laundry list is not pretty. It's somewhat broad. And I didn't necessarily go in talking about Congress now. I didn't go in with the intent to be partisan. I mean, my political views are known to people who know me, and I won't announce them here. Nobody cares about that. But I didn't want to, you know, come out and say it's the conservatives or the Republicans or the, you know, whatever else. I thought there was enough blame on both parties to go around where really both parties, in a partisan way, share the blame almost equally. I mean, it was certainly the Republicans, Senator Kyle, Senator Bill Frist as majority leader, people like Goodlatte, Wolf in the House, Baucus from Alabama. There's a lot of people clearly on the right that are against us and will always be against us. And certainly in 2006, when UEIGA was passed, it was a Republican initiative that forced it through. However, my point was in 2008, everything changed, and essentially the Democrats had complete control over both houses of Congress and the White House, and we had a poker-playing president, supposedly, elected. Again, no one disputes this. I think most people felt that even people who are conservative would say, what is better for online poker legalization? I think most people at 2008 would have said, well, probably not the Republicans because of what they've done, so let's roll the dice with the Democrats. And so here it is, the Democrats sweep into office in 2008, and sure enough, nothing changed for 2 years. And here we get up, to fast forward the tape, if I will. Obviously, Barney Frank's bill ran into several obstacles. And in the 11th hour of the last Congress, we get into essentially House Majority Leader Harry Reid essentially being lobbied very hard by the casino industry, the American Gaming Association, AGA, Caesars Entertainment, other forces, lobbied Harry Reid hard to try to push this thing through in the 11th hour, essentially doing what we call a reverse Bill Frist of what he did in 2006, which is to latch it onto some resolution and that would pass, and it failed. And again, this entire convoluted type thing just shows really how disorganized our movement was, maybe from the start, how many miscalculations we made, how few political allies we really had when we thought we had more. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't afraid to call out those political leaders for failing us, and by the way, crediting those who did stand with us. And then again, it was I thought members of both parties, and it was obviously a very great disappointment, because to wrap this question up, I don't see, I could ask you this, I don't see things changing right much in the next two
2 to 4 years.
Now, speaking of calling out, you also called out both brick-and-mortar companies and online rooms for the further role. And let's talk about the brick-and-mortars a little bit. They obviously came rushing in at the end with Harry Reid, but they stood in the way of it for quite a while before that, didn't they?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, I you know, if you've been around the gaming industry for a long time like I have, I've seen in certain battleground states where, you know, essentially used to be just Nevada and New Jersey that had legalized gambling. And I've watched legal maneuvering in states where, you know, first Mississippi and, you know, these other states, and then the Indian tribes come in and so forth. And I've watched the movements in each of the states, and usually the mantra is the same. The message is the same from the casino industry, which is essentially, let's give people a choice. In other words, let's give people let's open up a casino and let people, if they want to come to the casino, they can play. It's, you know, essentially the free market. It's a kind of a libertarian philosophy. Provide the service. If people want to come, they come. And if you don't like casinos, stay away. Do whatever you want to do. I mean, that is kind of a, you know, again, it's a free market approach to this issue. And casinos have always, at least for many years, have promulgated that kind of message. Well, sure enough, once a lot of these casinos lock up a state or lock up a region or lock up a form of gaming, particularly like the horse industry or mm-hmm. horse racing industry, they want to protect it. And all of a sudden, they just throw those arguments about free market and competition is good and let's allow the consumer the opportunity to play here. That all that stuff hits the ash heap. They have no interest whatsoever in anything free market once they lock up a monopoly on gaming. And that's what we've seen here, certainly with a lot of California card rooms coming out against online gaming. I called out Sheldon Adelson, the owner of the Venetian. I think his position is a disgrace. I have also heard that Sheldon Adelson, you know, phoned Harry Reid personally and said, you know, I'm not going to contribute to you know, a lot of concern, you know, your campaign and you know, things like that. So I just think that's just remarkable that somebody that has a poker room in Las Vegas, a very good poker room, owns a big property in Las Vegas, is sabotaging our freedom. Right. And you know, Steve Wynn has been on the fence for some time. He was actually against online poker, legalization of online poker and online gaming for some time. Again, I understand he's now on the fence on this issue, but again, Steve Wynn, a maverick, a visionary, a man who I think a lot of us admire. How could this man be so behind the times and not see, you know, the great potential of online gaming? And again, I could just keep going with names, and you know, but it's been quite an eye opener to see really some betrayal within our industry. People that we thought would stand with us have been very much against us.
Now, the online poker rooms, I think your point was, and I'll let you state it yourself, but that they're staying too much in the shadows here. They're worried about getting too involved in this and just hoping that it happens. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's more than a fair assessment, and I don't want to get into my own personal dealings that much, only because I had some confidentiality. I mean, I used to work for PokerStars. I don't know if people know that. I worked for PokerStars for 3 years, and a company I'm very proud of. I'm very glad to see they've done so well. I don't work for them anymore, by the way. But in fact, I left PokerStars after UIGA was passed in 2006, voluntarily. And I remember back in 2006, and I followed things very, very closely. And I was told by, you know, certain people in the company, I followed this thing very, very closely and was told essentially there's no way that this thing was going to pass. Well, I'll tell you, somebody really miscalculated. Somebody blew it. And, you know, some heads should roll. I mean, we're talking about something that affects people's lives, livelihoods, our freedom to do this. I mean, you know, I know we kind of laugh it off, and I'm not picking on you here, but nobody seems to take this seriously, and it's like, you know, what's going on? To me, it's a very serious issue, and I can't believe again, we're not a small, you know, marginal industry anymore. If you take the online poker industry, we're as big as, certainly a Fortune 500 type company. Right. We're a big industry now. We should behave like this is the major leagues. And if you go to Washington, I lived in Washington, D.C. for 10 years. You walk down K Street or you walk down anywhere around Washington, you see the association of this, the association of that, this, that. Every single major corporation and or trade association and union or whatever,
they all have an advocacy group or some kind of lobbying firm that does their work for them. And until the PPA came along, there was really nothing. And in my view, the PPA has done some very good work. But still, I think the movement and the plan, game plan from 2005 or so on, has been very mismanaged. And this isn't just an opinion. This is a fact. We're 5 years into this thing now, and we see no progress, essentially, at the federal level. And I think it's time, for some heads to start rolling.
Yeah. Now, because we don't have a federal bill, and I agree with you, it seems like it's going to be dire here for at least a couple years, if not longer. States are kind of taking it on their own now. By the time this interview airs, we'll already know whether New Jersey actually gets their bill signed. Florida here has a bill that's got moving in both houses. California's talking about it. Iowa, Washington, D.C.'s even mentioned it. What's your view on these intrastates? And will enough of them work? Will that push it into a federal realm at some point, do you think?
Yeah, I think the obviously it's a positive thing for us. And you know, if you can't do it, if you can't win the big battle, let's win some small ones. And let's win one. Let's win one battle somewhere. You know, whatever it takes. I don't care if it's Rhode Island, or you know, I'm not putting down.
Right, yeah,
just win somewhere. Yeah. Get some beachhead on this movement and say we've got something legal in the U.S. I mean, again, that probably should have been the tactic from year one, for whatever reason it wasn't. But I got to say that I'm not involved in any specific state movement, and I'm going to actually. This is one of the things I try not to comment on something I don't have some first-hand knowledge on. I'm just like you or a lot of people out there. I just observe what's going on. Obviously, I think the intent is that once one or two or three of the states do legalize poker, intrastate poker, you'll see that some pacts form, you know, between the states, and then, you know, say New Jersey can link to California and this and that, and then all of a sudden you get 6-7, and then other states would certainly see the bonanza. When I say bonanza, I mean the financial windfall.
Absolutely.
You know, my goodness, what's going on in Wisconsin right now, and with, you know, with protests and this and that, and you're going to see this all over the country where states... States are literally bankrupt. State budgets, including Nevada, by the way. I mean, it's, you know, the state where I live, the state's bankrupt, and this is really hard to imagine. So it's either do you want to cut, you know, the services of state employees? You want to fire, lay off teachers? You want to do all this, or do you want to, you know, look for other additional alternative sources of revenue, such as online gaming and things like that? And I think, again, if you ask the average person in the street, this is an obvious. You know, obvious answer as to what most people want. But again, we're very behind the times. Our political leaders are way, way behind the times, and it's just going to take some time to catch up. But fortunately, a few states, as you say, seem to be pulling the movement, and we'll see what happens.
All right, Nolan, I appreciate your time. I know you got to get back to the final table, but thank you very much.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
Ever been to London, Chris?
Actually, no, I have not. I've never been to London.
Neither have I. But I want to go, because it sounds like a cool place. And if we go, I'm gonna stay with my new friend Kieran from London, who's sending this hand of the week.
Awesome! I love international. I love international hands of the week.
Yes, absolutely. Now, of course, he said London. I'm assuming it's England. Could be London, Ohio, or just from the London Bridge.
Could be from the man cave of London Fletcher.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly, yeah. So maybe I'm making Kieran a little cooler than I think he is. But I'm gonna assume it's London, jolly old England. Across the pond.
Sounds cool.
But he says he loves catching up on the poker cast on his commutes to and from work.
Hey,
what would we do without commutes from to and from work, Chris? We'd have no listeners.
Does he ride the tube?
You know, he doesn't mention the tube. That would help me pin down whether it was actually London,
yeah.
England.
Yeah, if he said tube, then we would know where he was, but
But he definitely appreciates us teaching him strategy and variations of poker that tend to be weaker for him. See?
Cool.
We're a teacher. he says he's been playing these 440 to 180 man sit and goes on Stars, I assume, because they're on there all the time. And he's trying to build his bankroll sensibly.
Okay.
Three cheers.
Sounds nice.
And he says he finds he has a considerable edge in these tournaments. Because the first prize money is nothing to turn your nose up at.
Cool.
Hey, I'm excited when I win a heads up game. That first place money is great for me. All right, so he's going to give us a little background to the villain of this game. He says he didn't have any trackers going on, though, so he can't provide any of the numbers that we love so much.
Yeah.
But he says the villain has been super aggressive on the final table with the stack fluctuating from 140 constantly. All right, so this guy knows how to move the chips around.
Okay.
He has called close to 100% of pre-flop raises when he's in the blinds, no matter whether it's a 2.5x raise or an 8x raise.
Jeez.
So he says he's pretty much playing any two cards when he's in the blinds.
Man.
And he tends to bet any draw he has and loves to bluff on the turn.
Wow. Man, wow, that's some serious detail on one guy at one final table.
This is like a Jack Bauer dossier from CTU here.
Good God.
Probably even know what he likes to have for lunch.
He prefers pumpernickel.
All right, so we're four players left in this 180.
Wow.
Man sitting goes, all right.
That's impressive.
And,
all
Jolly Old Kieran is the chip leader.
Okay.
And the stacks are, the button has 40K. Our villain who's in the small blind has 87K. Big blind has 33K. And we're sitting large and in charge with 110K.
Very nice. Very nice.
All right.
Yep.
Blinds are 800, 1600.
Good God.
Yeah, so the shorter stacks still have more than 20 big blinds.
Jeez.
And have not tended to do anything out of line. So this is the one, the downfall to the one. I mean, you get a lot of play in it, but it's a wise way to go to dinner. Don't get one of these at 180. You're going to get too much play.
God, this is crazy.
All right, so we are in the cutoff, which is a first act since we're four-handed.
Right.
Looking at the Cowboy of Clubs and the Cowboy of Hearts.
The Cowboy. Okay, that's nice.
I'm just trying to work in some cliches every once in a while to get Gundam's dander up.
All right, well, I would shove. That way you can avoid any trouble. You only get called by a better hand. Than...
all right, so King of Clubs, King of Hearts. Blinds, 1,600 to call.
And you said the villain is in the blinds, right?
Villain is in the small blind.
So you know we're going to call
almost
there.
Anything. And the other stacks don't get out of line too much.
All right, so 3X is 4,800. So, yeah, I mean, you know what? I want a call here. I don't want to waste his hand. So
yeah,
I would make it like $5,000, 30. I'd make it 4,800.
Yeah, I'd make it $49.99.
Yeah, that's right. You would. yeah, that makes sense to me.
It's a little bit more. It's enough to get the smaller stacks out, and then what we're hoping is that we will get called by the villain and isolate, or even raised, but it sounds like he calls a lot. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But we definitely want chips from this hand, but I don't want a lot of customers here.
Yeah, no, that's a good raise. I think 4,800 is a good raise three-handed, especially since they know they can be tight and don't have to worry about shoving with any two cards and not short stacked. So I like that raise. Should get the wanted effect. So let's make that raise.
All right. Well, our hero does raise to 4,800.
Okay.
So it didn't quite round it up, but you know, in line with what we wanted to do.
Right.
You're gonna go 4,800. I don't know why you don't go 4,799, but that's just me. and he said, in addition to what we know about the villain, he says the other reason is that he thinks the raise in the mouth that the two shorter stacks may decide to shove over, which obviously I'd love.
Right.
You know, so if one of the two things happen, you're in golden.
And if you get heads up, then you're ideal. You got kings heads up.
Yeah. All right, well, the button folds. The villain calls, as predicted. Big blind folds. And so we achieved our goal to get heads up with the players playing anything.
Heads up in position.
Flop is the four of hearts. I'm sorry. Oh, channeling Dave here from San Jose. Flop is the king of spades. Five of hearts, four of hearts.
As long as you say in one order or the other, though, it doesn't really matter. As long as it's ascending or descending,
hey,
does it really matter?
Hey, Dave wants it descending. I am going to make him happy.
All right, so king of spades, five of hearts, four of hearts. We have top set, but there are a lot of draws that could get there, especially with someone playing any two cards.
Yep.
We need to be mindful of that.
The villain checks to us.
He checks to us. Okay, so let me see. We got top set, but straight draws and flush draws are possible in the next card we made. So There's about, I would say, what, 10 grand in the pot. So, I would bet, I would not check. So I would bet, like, I would bet pot here, I think, because there's two draws I get there. I might bet 10 grand.
You know what? I think I'm going to agree with you.
There's so many draws. We know this guy plays any two cards. Maybe he got a little piece of it and he wants to get frisky, but I can't bet a little bit because he'll get the right odds if he has something like ace, three of hearts, you know, or you know, 6-7 or, you know, anything. So I'm going to bet the pot here.
All right. I'm going to do the same thing. All right. Well, our hero says it took a few seconds to work out his best play. Boy, these kids these days. Come so automatic to us. Some people need to take a few seconds to figure this out.
15 seconds not enough for you online? Hit the time button.
All right, so he says a standard continuation bet looks okay here, but my hand seems almost too big to bet and have the villain fold. What do you think about that, Chris?
No, because he's going to call if he has something anyway. So if he doesn't have anything, the only hands that catch up are hands that beat three kings. I don't agree with that. I think that you need to bet here and just move on. You know, you made a nice little pot here, you got it, and you move on if he folds. But if he calls, then he's got something. Or could have something. So I think you need to bet. I don't think you need to check here. You check. I understand it's top set, and you're like, but really, if he plays any two cards, then any two cards will make a straight or a flush here, and you gotta really just let it go. So I'd bet.
All right. Says he also knows the villain tends to bet draws, and he has not bet with two hearts out. Since he has not bet with two hearts out, we can feel pretty confident that no turn will hurt us. Which I think you already disagree with.
Yes, I do, and I don't need to say it all over again, but I do disagree because the A2TC or whatever they call it, that right in the back, it sticks in the back of my mind with his little recap of what the guy's like. So, and he's super aggressive, so you know you could be check raising here too. So you might as well bet and see if he tries to check raise you, and then you could really get it all in. So I just can't not bet here. I have to bet. So I don't agree with checking. Did he check? Did you say he checked too, or?
All right, we're getting there.
Okay,
we're working through the few seconds he thought to think out the best play.
Taking us 5 minutes to get through his.
Yeah, don't rush me.
Few moments.
All right, says the villain also would likely bet any pair here, so I felt that it would be better to check back and hope for a bluff on the turn from him.
Ugh, do not like that. I do not like that. I really think we need to be.
Here's the problem with that. I think is that if a safe card hits, and he does bluff it, then we're probably getting more out of him.
Yeah,
but we're taking a chance that a not safe card is going to hit, and then we're in trouble.
Think about how many cards can come that aren't safe versus how many can come that are safe, and that's what you're putting your tournament on. Because if he gets it all in, you get it all in, and you're wrong somehow or something like that, you're down to like, you know, 20K. So really, think about the cards that would hurt you here. Any heart would make it, you have no idea where you stand. Any six, any seven, any eight, any ace, any deuce, any tray. I mean, really, all those cards, that's more than half, that's like half the deck. So I need to bet here. I need to bet my hand when I can. And if the guy's going to check raise me, all the more to you that you'll be able to even re-raise again. So I don't like to check at all.
All right. Okay. Well, we do check. And the turn is the ace of hearts. So our board now is the ace of hearts, king of spades, five of hearts, four of hearts. So a flush got there if he had it. Straight got there if he had the always fun to play deuce tray.
Mm-hmm.
And the villain checks to us.
Yeah. Well, again, if this guy is super aggressive and he hasn't bet yet, then he probably doesn't have any of this yet, I would think. If you know, I'm only going on the information that he's giving us. So if this guy really is super aggressive and has checked twice, then I don't think he has anything yet. But it doesn't necessarily mean he can't have something soon, because now there's three hearts on the board. He can have a queen of hearts in his hand. You know, he could have, he could have an ace in his hand with, a small heart, a three of hearts. And who knows what he has? So any heart now kills us too. That doesn't pair the board. So we gotta do something here. I think we really think we misplayed the flop, believe it or not. And I think now we really have to put the hammer down, and now we have to bet pot again, because now, or at least three quarters of the pot. See, I know Lee wants to kill me when I say see where we are, but this guy just calls. Then you have to say, all right, my heart might kill us here. You know, now also a Broadway draw gets there too on the river with any queen, jack, or 10. You know, it's conceivable this guy has a heart in his hand now with paint. So, I really wish we bet on the flop. I hate being put in these situations, you know. But I'm going to bet 2/3 to 3/4 of the pot, I guess, now. And, you know, I mean, I guess betting pot was easier on the flop because no hand beats us. Now, hands beat us. So I'm reluctant to bet that much, I think. You know,
right.
Maybe a pot bet is too much here now. So yeah, maybe 75?
11-2 in the pot right now.
So. Yeah, so maybe 8,000, 7,500 maybe?
Hmm.
I don't know.
All right, well, our hero says it's unlikely the villain has checked a flush draw, and says there is a chance he has called us with a weak ace. He says he can't put the villain on the deuce tray because he's been pretty consistent with betting obvious draws. All right, you know, he's had a history with this guy. I'll give him that.
All right.
Then he goes on to say, my hand is still huge here. I was set with a draw to the nut flush. That's right, because we had that king of hearts.
Right.
My only real worry is that I would not like to give the villain another free card in case he has queen 10, queen jack, or jack 10, and I let him hit Broadway for free.
No, exactly. I mean, I said that with the paint. I agree. I think, and the other thing too is, now if he does have that and he has one of the hearts, like I said before, the queen of hearts, he might stick around because now he's got really only one card that'll beat him. And you have to have the king of hearts. And to him, he's going to think you don't have the king because you would have bet the flop if you had the king of hearts. So now you're telling him to stick around. I mean, if he's that thoughtful in his play.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, our hero pushes out 4,800 virtually.
That's not enough to get that many. I mean, if you have a heart in your hand and two paint, you're probably going to call there because that's 16,000 in the pot now, and you're getting 4-1 on your money to try to hit a flush and a straight if you have those cards.
All right, let me ask you this here. I mean, are we at this point? Are we trying just to win what was in the pot, or are we trying to get a call to get more money out of this guy?
I think that we're trying to. Well, you and I are trying to win this pot, but also make it expensive enough for this guy to not just hit his hand for free and make me lose.
So you want to bet more because if he calls, that's more money we'll win. If he misses his draw and if he calls that much, he's probably not getting the right odds to actually bet that, to make that call anyhow.
The amount that we want to bet. Exactly. Because, you know, they always say, you ask yourself why you're betting. And like you said, if I'm betting to build a pot, then I'm thinking 5,000-6,000 is a good bet because he's going to get the right eyes to call. But I don't want to build a pot here because I'm susceptible to so many hands that beat me now. So I don't want to bet the pot here. I want to make sure that he's, you know, I don't want to bet a little bit. I want to bet enough that it's going to make it not exactly the right odds for him to call, and at the same time punish him for calling if he does, and I can still win with my trip kings. I just feel like there's no real, and if you check here, you're wrong because you're giving him unlimited outs or chances to hit, and if you bet too much and he's already got a hand, you know, you're in a tough position. Yeah. This is why you bet the flop.
I'm going to agree with you on there. It's a tough call now. Now, I don't necessarily criticize Kieran here because he's got a read on this guy and thought he was doing well on the flop, but I think this is where the breakdown in the theory goes is, while he may not have had the stuff on the flop, if you give him a free look at the turn, then the turn makes it much more difficult and improves his hand to the point that he's going to do some of the crazy stuff that we know he's going to do.
Yeah, this is why we always bet the flop if you have a hand, because if you don't, then on the turn he picks up all these other outs. Now you got to bet some amount that, you know, is going to be damaging if you're wrong. So it's hard to play small ball when you're not betting every street. So I think that... I don't know. I think we're in trouble if we don't bet enough here. If he how much did he bet? Did you say
he bet 48?
48. Yeah. So that's, oh god, he's getting 4-1 on his money to call now if he has any kind of draw at all. And what we're hoping is that it's just a heart draw, because if it gets there, we're golden. So, but if it does two paint and he gets there, then you're gonna kick yourself for not betting that flop and betting strongly on the turn. I would bet more here. I think I would bet like 8,000 to 9,000 here. And even though at that point, you know, it would still be, I guess he'd still be getting 2-1 on his money. I don't know if that's enough to call with only one card to come, you know. So I would bet like 8,000 to 9,000 here and hope he folds.
All right. Well, our hero's reasoning is that he wants to invite him to stick around with a medium high heart in his hand or a pocket pair. He thinks a pocket pair is unlikely, though, as he may have bet the flop here, but he may also have expected a continuation bet from us to check raise.
Yeah.
He says, I think I could maybe bet up to 7K, but in the end settled on the 4.8K.
Yeah, I mean, 7K is about two-thirds of that pot, so I don't know. I still think you have to bet a little more here. So many draws now can get there, and so many hands already could have gotten there. I just feel like if I bet 48 and he calls and on the river, what do I do when a scare card comes again, like a paint or something? I don't know. I really don't know. This is really a tough situation. This is why I would have bet. You know,
it's a good hand of the week.
Yeah, no, it's no secret when you play against me. If I bet the flop, I generally have something because I don't want to put myself in these kinds of positions. But maybe I'm just one-dimensional. But I wouldn't bet 48. That's for sure.
All right. Well, he bets the 4,800, and he doesn't say, but I'm assuming he calls because we're going to the river now.
Okay.
And the river is the queen of spades, so our final board is. Boy, see, now I mess it up. This is what Dave said. I have to mess it up. I don't know how to do this correctly.
No, he said the turn and river have to be that way. So
yeah.
You say
right, so,
king
so
of spades, five
spades,
of hearts, four of hearts.
Queen of spades, ace of hearts.
No, no.
Eight of spades, four of hearts, five of hearts. See, this is
okay, so the final board.
Already, because he already admitted that we made some good points last week. I told him I would try.
Final board reads this way. King of spades, five of hearts, four of hearts, ace of hearts, queen of spades.
All right, there you go.
That's how he wants it. So... All right, so okay, so now Jack 10 gets there with the Jack of hearts, the 10 of hearts.
So that deadly paint that you were hoping to avoid is there.
Yeah, if you bet the flop, the Jack 10 folds. If you really bet the turn, then the Jack 10 may have to fold. And it's got to be what he has. You know, it's got to be it. It's got to be Jack 10.
Our hero says on the face of it, not a bad card. He says the only hand we could really be worried about is Jack 10. As a flush just doesn't add up here, I'd fully expect the villain to have a bet a flush draw on the flop or at least bet out check raises on the turn. So he's working out how much I can bet for value here, looking at the pot being 21K. And he's beginning to think of a number around 9 to 13K. And he wants the villain to call his value bet. But obviously the villain is acting first and leads out for 11.2K.
All right, I'm just calling. I am just calling here. And the reason why is about a billion hands beat three kings.
Yeah.
And if I was thinking of betting 9 to 13,000 and someone did it for me, you're only going to get raised by a better hand if you had made that bet first, check raise. So why not just call this and be happy with if you're right? But it has to, I mean, if it could be a flush, but since the guy's so aggressive, it seems like it's Jack 10, and Jack 10 got there free for no reason. Basically,
yeah, and if we have the best hand, then you know, kudos to him for a nice little blocking bet. But that's you're right. I think it's about what we would have bet anyhow. So
yeah,
you know, it's really not a lot of loss here. I mean, other than if we think that he would call with a weaker hand, which
right because it's
wouldn't.
It's the equivalent if you call his 11, it's the equivalent of betting 5,000 on each street, flop, turn, and river. So really, it's not that big, especially since you started with 110,000. It's not that much into your stack. You're probably going to be even with this guy now in chips, but really, I can't for the life of me raise here. There's no way I'm raising. So many hands beat us. And if the guy's aggressive and a good player, it doesn't mean he has to be aggressive every single hand. He could be tricky, too. So he could have had a flush here and slip, or a baby flush. You know, I don't know. But it's got to be Jack 10 or some sort of weird flush like 7-8 of hearts because... For him to wake up now and bet there, it's got to be, all right, he's hoping that you have, like, ace-queen or ace-king, and, you know, he's going to get – he's value betting. So he's going to have – we got to be beat. That's why it's the hand of the week, but we got to be beat. But I feel like it's Jack-10.
What about, like, an ace-queen or something like that, a two-pair hand?
Yeah, maybe, but I feel like he would have raised with ace-queen pre-flop.
Or maybe not even ace-queen, maybe a queen with another – all of these cards on the board.
So, like, you think like a queen five or something?
Yeah, I mean, queen? I don't think this guy's going to get out of. But he has said that he calls with, you know, 100% of preflop raises.
Yeah.
So, I mean, queen four, queen five, king queen, ace queen, all those are in his range at this point.
Well, you can put him on 9-7 of hearts, too, then. You know what I mean? You know, you can put him on any two hearts, then, as well. And I know the guy bets his draws, but if he bets his draws and he has a queen of hearts in his hand, then he's betting the turn.
Right.
And he didn't. So, I don't know. I think a plethora of hands beat this guy. and
a plethora of hands beat us.
Yeah, we need to
There's
order.
There's more reason just to call here, right?
We need to order another pint of Boddington's and just call.
Pint of Boddington's. Wow. Alright, well, our hero is confused, Chris.
Yeah, well, I'd be confused too, but I'd be calling.
He says the villain has invested 21K into this pot, has 60K behind. Our hero takes the time to work out the possible hands he could have. It seems like two pair made on the river. Ah, see, he's thinking like me. As a queen, queen X with queen of hearts. All right, that kind of makes sense too. He says a set of aces is never here. A set of queens could be, but that would be unusual for a super aggressive player to flat call queen queen out of position. As mentioned on the turn, I have to bet to charge the queen jack, jack 10, and queen 10. That makes sense for him to have one of these from his call, but I can't see him leading out with anything except for jack 10.
Well, here's the thing. We already dismissed the queen, the two pair thing, and the queen of hearts because he says he bets draws. So if he has a pair and what he would assume is a second nut flush draw on the turn, he's going to make a bet there. He's not going to check again, especially if he's super aggressive, which is what he said. So if this guy's super aggressive with a pair, he's probably even betting the flop if he made like a pair of fives with a queen just to put you to a test. And then if he doesn't, on the turn, now he's got the second nut flush draw and a pair. So now if he's got queens and fives, I don't know. I don't know if queens and fives would bet here. Maybe they would, but it just seems to me like if this guy does play any two cards and he's checked twice, then it's got to be something like Broadway cards that now have gotten there and not big Broadway cards because big Broadway cards might have re-raised pre-flop. So I don't think it's what he said. I don't think it's those things. And I definitely know it's not queen-queen. There's no way he has queen-queen. So I'm going to put him on the jack-10 or like 7-9 of hearts.
Okay. Well, our hero toys with the idea of a raise. Don't do it. But in the end, just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you know what, too? I even take back the 7-9 of hearts because if this guy really does bet his draws, he would have bet that flop or the something. And he would have protected on the turn, hoping that this guy doesn't have like a king of hearts in his hand. So I'm even taking the hearts.
You're leaving that jack 10, so at this point, you're just paying off a hand.
Yeah, I'm paying off a hand and hoping that he's got two pair.
All right. he says, I can only see ace queen or a strangely played set calling me that I can beat whilst jack 10. See, all right, we confirm London, England. or he's an expat living in London, Ohio now, still speaking. he says, whilst jack 10 will snap me off and have me crushed. In the end, I settle with a flat call.
Yeah, that's a smart move.
A flat call there?
Yeah, it's just a call. It's just a call because there's no more action on the end. So.
Yeah.
That's
all right, the
call.
Villain reveals jack of hearts, 10 of clubs.
Oh, yeah. It's either that or jack-jack, but there's no way he has jack-jack because he raises there. So, yep, it's the only hand that made sense there. But, yeah, it's the only hand that made sense because that's why he called on the turn, and you didn't make it expensive enough for him to call. That's what it feels like to me, and it feels like that was the mistake. The mistake was not betting the flop, and then the next mistake wasn't betting enough on the turn, I think. But the good thing was that he lost the minimum after that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he can just fold there, you know, with the powerfulest three kings. You know, he has to have those two precise cards. But it makes sense. The story makes sense when you retell it.
He says, for what it's worth, I ended up winning this tournament. Yay! when the villain flat called his 10-10 raise before shoving on an 8-4 deuce rainbow board with a monster 4-5.
Oh, my God.
See what goes around comes around.
Well, I mean, you know, I think he did all right. I feel like the flop was the key hand there, the key bet that should have been made. You would have gotten him to fold, probably. And if not, you would have really, if he calls, then you would have shut it down thinking he had hearts. And then, I don't know. I just think the flop is the key right there. The flop bet is key.
All right, Kieran, we appreciate you sending us a hand of the week. And we're going to send you back a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games that comes from the good folks at element26.net. And we invite more hands of the week to be sent to us at podcast@antiantmagazine.com. In fact, you can send us any old thing you want to at podcast@antiantmagazine.com.
Can they send a ham sandwich?
Sure, sure. If you can fit it through the email system, that's great. But it'll probably get spammed.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Scott, for tracking down Nolan Dahl and having a main topic for us this week while I was busy sweating it out to tables.
That's my first interview since Eric Seidel.
And you did a much better job with this one, I have to admit. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.